Welcome to the Lavo Show podcast. Conversations with outstanding human beings whose love has been inspired and transformed by Osho. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Hello and thanks for tuning in. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Turiya Hanover. Turiya is a world leader in human development and has been leading trainings and workshops since 1973. Turiya is an authentic seeker who renounced royalty and the conventional path to quench her inner thirst. I'm so happy to have Turiya on the show and I hope you enjoyed. Turiya, welcome to the show. How are you?
Welcome, Swaram. Thank you for inviting me. I'm very good. Happy to be here.
Oh, that's great. So, to start, tell us a little bit about how you came across Osho.
Well, in the 70s, we went into, Vimalkirti and I went into a German growth center. We were studying, and then after a while, we decided we needed to look at ourselves first before we were going to change the world. You know, 70s was a student revolt, and everybody was into, you know, Ho Chi Minh and changing everything. And we decided at one point, after we got our child, that it is actually the real transformation has to happen inside. So we went into a German growth center called CIST. We did the 9-month program there, 9 months of groups and primal and gestalt therapy and bioenergetic therapy. And at the end of that, you know, I looked at him and I said, yeah, I now forgiven up my parents. I cleaned up my past, but I still don't know how to die. And then we had a Buddhist monk who was kind of our little guide at the time. And then he said, why don't you go to India and meet the teacher of the Dalai Lama? He will help you with that question. So within 2 weeks, we packed everything, sold everything, and bought a big Mercedes bus and went overland to India. And of course, as the story always goes, we arrived in Dharamsala, and that particular teacher of the Dalai Lama had just 2 weeks before been sent to Zurich to run the Zurich Tibetan Monastery. So, and then we went on further to Nepal overland, and we had another address there. The guy also just had left, the Tibetan monk left to visit his mother was dying. Something happened. Anyway, and then I said, I want to look into the eyes of one of these people. That's why we came. And then I had heard of Osho before, of Bhagwan then. And then I said, let's go to Pune. And Vimalkirti said, no, I want to go to Pune for what? No, I'm not coming. So I said, no, I want to go to Pune. Let's go there. I want to sit in front of, I want to look into the eyes of somebody who has that, who knows that space. And then he said, okay, I'll come, but I'll stay in the hotel. Of course, we arrived there 1975, on Osho's birthday, and of course he didn't stay in the hotel. And we arrived there, and Osho talked about Jesus's crucifixion the night before he was crucified. And he said, you know, Jesus tried to talk to his disciples and tell them, you know, this will be the last night, and, you know, try to get them ready for what was to come. And they all fell asleep, and I was sitting there, and I thought, wow, this is Jesus, and this is somebody who is like Jesus, and this time I will not go to sleep. I will not. I will stay, and I will do everything that I can to stay committed. And it was just like that for me right away. I just knew it. I saw Osho, and that was so clear to me. And the same for Vimalkirti also. And so then we took sannyas.
Wow, that's very, very powerful. And just a bit of background for people who don't know your past. And you mentioned Vimalkirti in a number of occasions that you traveled together and you packed up everything and left. But in your case, the situation was a little bit different. At a very young age, you married a prince. Vimalkirti was actually a prince and you became a princess. And your husband was the prince wealth von Anhover, the great grandson of the late German emperor. So basically, you were a young royal couple with everything that most people would dream of, and you know, part of the oldest royal family in Europe. And then somehow you ended up in India becoming sannyasin of Osho. So in 1981, Vimalakirti suffered from a hereditary condition and had a brain hemorrhage. And when he was in a coma before dying, Osho went to see him. And after that meeting, Osho declared Vimalakirti enlightened. So how was for you to lose your beloved husband who married you for love, but also knowing that he was liberated at the time of death?
Well, of course, there was a mix of very, very ecstatic feelings. At the time when Osho told us to, when he collapsed, he was basically unconscious, and unless we would have put him into a breathing machine, he would have been dead, and then physically dead. And Osho said, just keep him alive because I need to still work on him. And it was a huge shock. On the other hand, it was such a big opportunity, you know, to be in the presence of a master, of a commune in such a situation. And when we decided to live in Pune in 1976, a woman called Vipassana died, and that was our first experience with death. And him and I, we went to the ghats, where we burn people in India. She was carried on a stretcher, and Vimalakirti and I walked together, and he looked at me and he said, if I want to die, this is how I really want to die. You know, this is exactly how I want to die. You know, and I remembered that so well. And of course, we didn't know he would be one of the next people who would be on that stretcher. We had no idea, but that was one of the reasons why we then packed up everything and decided to live in Pune. We left everything behind, you know, the royalty, the money, name and fame and everything. It was just clear for both of us that we had to sit at the feet of the master. It was so clear. And then when it was then him, age 33, and I remember very well when I heard, oh my God, that he had collapsed, I was completely shocked out. I couldn't believe. I did not expect that at all. And then he... Of course, I was in big shock, and then he went to the hospital, and people came to sit and meditate, and I was in a mixture between a deep love and deep trust for Osho, for what was going to, you know, that we were exactly in the right place, and at the same time, of course, a huge loss, you know, somebody who I had been so closely connected with, traveled with to so many different areas of life, you know, from the whole royal background to becoming hippies to then becoming sannyasins, to living in Pune. I mean, it was just a huge, somebody who I traveled with so much. And Osho came to sit with him. He came to the hospital. And I remember that as one of the main turning points in my life. It was so unbelievably, I mean, it's indescribable. I was crying. Our daughter was there. She was crying. Osho was just sitting next to him. He touched him and he looked into his eyes. And Osho, of course, was very, very, he was smiling. He was a very, very just present. And I remember the sound of the machine. I remember Osho there. You know, I remember my tears. I don't know if it was tears of gratitude or tears of loss or tears of ecstasy. It was all together. And Osho got up and then he touched us. He touched our daughter. And then he said to her, everything will be okay. Well, she, of course, thought her father would live. And I, of course, knew at that point he was gone. You know, there was no way that he would live. His brain was completely finished. There was no way he would be alive. So it was a very, very, very moving moment. I'll never ever, it just changed my life. So mixture between deep, deep loss and incredible gratitude and incredible reminder of death will happen. You know, the body is just, we're just in this body for a certain amount of time and it will go. You know, and just to remember that this is just like Osho sometimes said, it's just like a short stay, and to really use this life to the fullest and also be ready to let go, as painful as it might be.
Osho spoke on many occasions about the link between death and enlightenment. And if I remember correctly, he said that many people reach enlightenment at the time of death.
Yes.
So what's your personal understanding of that, considering also your personal experience with Vimalakirti?
Well, I remember the night before I was with him, of course, the whole 6 days when he was in hospital. Then his kidney suddenly failed. The heart started to fail. The machine went beep, 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 beep. The nurses all come in there and trying to, whatever they did, I don't even know, revive him again. But I knew. And then suddenly there was this amazing, it was like a fire in the room. I can't even say. It was like a big, like a more than a fire. It was like a big, bright fire. Lightning in the room, and I just knew I had to be out of the room, and I left the room. I didn't know why. I just had to be out, and I think that was the time when he left the body, and then he got realized or enlightened or whatever that word is. It's just a word, you know, but he obviously then was in free of the body, in the light, if you want to say it like that. So it's hard to describe, but I knew it. And then the next morning, of course, that I was asked to go in there and say goodbye, and that was maybe the hardest thing to do.
Yeah, I can only imagine that. But at the same time, Osho taught his sannyasin. He taught us to celebrate death.
Yes, of course. Of course, that's the other side. You know, you also celebrate, because to die like this was Vimalakirti's deepest wish. So all he wanted was that, to die in, you know, in Osho's commune, in Osho's presence. That's all he was longing for. So for him, it was absolute, the biggest completion. And for me to be witness to that, and be held by Osho and be touched by him, you know, we had to then on the podium sit next to his dead body, and Osho came over and touched me and touched our daughter, and it was such a it was really one of the most amazing because they are so extreme. On one hand there's this big grief and loss, and on the other hand it's that incredible awakening that happens, and that light that happens all at the same time. And it was such a very hard to describe. And then people making music and people celebrating and people dancing and people singing, and Anubhava, who was one of Kirti's close friends, was singing. It just really it moved me in such a different dimension. I felt like almost like my life started in that moment. I felt like everything that happened before was much less meaningful.
And there is a wonderful video about Vimalakirti's death celebration. And I've always been really impressed by the look on Vimalakirti's face. You know, he looks so peaceful, so serene, and just beautiful, radiating light.
Yes.
How was for you to deal with Vimalakirti's death in 1981 compared to Osho's death later on in 1919?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Of course, when Osho died or left his body, I was in a very different place in myself. You know, with Vimalakirti, I was still very, very young, and I was my identity was still around being with him. So it was like a very personal loss. And when Osho left the body, it was something, oh my God, it was... I can't even say. It was such a moving. In one way, we always knew he would go because he talked about it so often. Even when I came, 1975, he already talked about Jesus' death, and he was always like, he's not going to stay in his body very long, so just don't miss it. And then when it finally happened, I had such a mixture between loss, between also sadness, and between complete feeling of ecstatic expansion. For having been able to have been with somebody, or still and still with him, really, like you said, only speak to me in the present. But at the same time, I'm also very attached to his physical presence. You know, I loved his body, the hands, the movement, the laughter, the joy. You know, I also, you then have to also let that go, and that of course is not so easy. And at the same time, it was such a big big celebration, and it was. So that same mix between deep, deep loss and letting go, and on the other hand, really touching a different dimension. I mean, such a gratitude for what Osho has created for all of us, the commune, the experiences of the growth, and I mean, it's my life, you know, and to be able to have been part of this, I'm grateful for that every day. It has so much shaped my inner life, it has shaped my being, my heart, my soul, everything. So again, many different things that happened.
Well, thank you for sharing that. It's really wonderful. So let's talk now about the work you do. As I mentioned in the introduction, you're one of the world leading therapists with over 40 years experience working with people. So I'm curious to know, how did you manage to take all this professional experience accumulated in these four decades, including your personal experience of death, meditation, and living with Osho and Enlightened Master? So how did you take all of this and translate it in the work you do today?
Very interesting to go back to Santi when I came to Osho. Then he one of the first things he said to me, for you only Vipassana. Yeah, he said, you don't need to do the groups, you only do Vipassana. I was like, okay. And then 3 days later, I was invited to go and assist in the encounter group, the famous encounter group with Paul Lowe today. Then he was Tirtha. So again, there's the opposite of those two very, very opposite movements happening. So then I was 3 years in the encounter group, and I learned really the most incredible skills of how to work with people and how to provoke a space of deep, deep transformation. I mean, people got transformed in that group room. People had satoris and breakthroughs and openings like I've never seen before, you know, because it was real. It wasn't just like therapy and doing a little fiddle here, fiddle there. It was an existential experience in the presence of a master. It was really about waking up. And then after 3 years, Osho asked me to then create my own group. She said, that's enough now, so now I want you to create groups. And then I created Primal and Fresh Beginnings and all kinds of processes that I then had to lead, and Tantra, the Tantra Intensive and Tantra training and whatnot. So, and because, we were so fortunate to work under Osho's guidance. And in those days, we still would come with a group. At the end of the group, we would sit with Osho, and he would talk to the people in front of us and then also ask us, how was the group? How did it go? So we had like a constant supervision by him, if you want to say it like that, or guidance, you know, what to do and how to be with the people. And so all my training, if you want to call it like that, I really had through Osho's presence. And for me, therapy is always in the service of meditation. It's a preparation for meditation. It's not an end product. You know, it's a means for people to then be able to be more relaxed, be more embodied, and to sit more still, or be able to really come to meditation. So that's how I learned it, and that's how it always was for me. And at the same time, you know, because we lived in the ashram, so we were never paid. There was no financial involvement. There was no, you had to survive and had to convince people to come back for sessions. So there was an incredible freedom in working with people, because we couldn't be bored. You know, it wasn't tied to survival. So I learned really so many different skills in group leading, in working with people, that probably only very few people have. You know, with different nationalities, with people who are super difficult, with people who are, you know, a little bit on the edge. I mean, what not? And non-stop, just like, you know, with people always think with Osho was like holidays. It was never holidays for me. We worked all the time. It was normal. You worked. You sat with him in the morning, you sat with him in the evening or dashram, and then we worked. You know, people also, we sat around and we had sex all the time. It was completely not true. I really learned how to, in a way, to serve and to give and to work. And I loved it. I loved it, every moment of it. But my learning came really through being in that fortunate situation in the ashram. Also, therefore, we always had people. You never had to go out and find people. The groups were always full, and then you could start and play and learn. And it was like a transmission, really.
Well, that's really beautiful to hear the inside view of you living there and giving us a totally different picture from what normally people say from the outside, especially the media. And also I love this idea of freedom of expression, the fact that you were there doing the groups and had the freedom of experimenting, and it wasn't tied to money or profession. So I think that makes a big, big difference. But I'd love to dig a little bit deeper and on the personal guidance you received from Osho. So you mentioned that during the groups you had the fortune to be able to go back to Osho and listen to his feedback on how to guide this group. So I'd love to hear what kind of guidance Osho was giving you.
Well, in the encounter group, for instance, he gave special guidance. For instance, he told us for 5 days you do nothing, absolutely nothing. And then the last 2 days you do body work and you give them something. You know, you really help them and work with them. Yeah? But he always used to say, like, rescuing people is not going to do the job. You know, people have to come back to themselves, and helping them is not going to help them. So that in 5 days, not to do anything. We would just sit in the chambers with maybe 20 people or something like that, and, you know, no windows, with padded walls, and people were in there, and 5 days we really wouldn't do anything. And people would go crazy. They would absolutely go crazy. You know, they want somebody to tell you what to do. They want somebody to help you. They want somebody to save you. You know, people would get violent and angry, and everything came up just by that simple structure. Can you imagine? And I of course was in there. I was Jethro was much older. I was a young chicken then, was 25 26. I was terrified to be in there because people would get so angry and scream at us and want to attack us, and all kinds of things happened. It was scary, but it was an existential experience, you know. And because we were all sitting in meditation with Osho in the evening and in the morning, so it had a different therapy, was in a different in service of something else. It was really in service of waking up. And that was one of the things. Another thing happened when a woman wanted to leave, and of course we were trying to convince her to stay, and, you know, saying, yeah, you have to be here, and commitment and blah 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 blah, all these things when you try somebody to stay. And then Osho talked to that, and then the woman came out, had darshan with him. She talked and she said, I didn't want to be there and I hated it and blah 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 blah. And then Osho said to us, never ever make somebody feel guilty or bad if they want to leave. This is one process that might work for one person, and there's another process that might work for somebody else. You know, do not try to force people into a structure if they don't want to be there like that. You know, you have no right to do that. People want to go, they want to go, then they go. You know, and don't make them feel guilty for that. So, you know, things like that. Then you learn, you know, how to respect other people, really, and not to force your own therapeutic, you know, helper onto them, or wanting to save them and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's really interesting for me to hear, because I think the fact that Osho was there, and as you said, that therapy was used for a bigger purpose, it's something that it's kind of a little bit lost nowadays. And so beautiful that, you know, you're kind of authentic in that sense, and I'm sure that in the work you do, you carry on this authenticity of Osho's, how he intended these kind of groups to be led. And also, I think I'd love to expand on the fact that Osho pioneered a new experiment never tried before in the history of humankind. So he brought together all this new Western psychology and method for working with people to help them resolve psychological issues and emotional issues. So the therapy together with meditation. And I think that, again, things got a little bit mixed up. So I'd love to hear from you, how do you see this combination of therapy and meditation?
Well, I personally understand really that you, the basic is always meditation. And if you don't bring meditation to people in whatever form, that might be dynamic or kundalini, or, you know, people need a different kind of meditation so that they get interested in. But otherwise, therapy can go endless. You go from one problem to the next problem to the next problem, and then you work on this life, then you work on your past life. It is never ending stories. And for me, the purpose of therapy is to create some healing, to create, of course, trauma healing. Some people are very traumatized, so when they meditate, they just dissociate. They don't really meditate, you know. So you want to embody people. You want to help them to come into their bodies, to really be present, to be able to be present. But then, for me, the next step is always, it's always based in meditation, because by the end, no therapy will give you that existential experience of meditation. I think it's the only way out of our mess, you know. And Osho tried to create those two things together. But often, like, for instance, we try to sometimes do night sessions because we thought our groups were so important. You know, we needed to do primal and they had to do a night session. And Osho said, he was immediately like, no way, there's no need for night session. You come here and sit and meditate and come to darshan and come to discourse. You know, and we always tend to take ourselves so super important. Therapists kind of have a bit of an ego about it. And he made it always very, very clear. Meditation is the number one, just like dynamic kundalini, and then sitting within is the number one. And once people have that, then you help them to sort out their lives, you know, but not forever.
Well, it's great to hear that from you, who are one of the most prominent therapists in the world, because, you know, that's a little bit my personal experience. When I came to Osho at the beginning, of course, I was interested in meditation, but I just couldn't meditate. You know, my mind was just crazy and I had lots of issues. So therapy helped me. But what I saw doing some groups, not many, thankfully, but what I saw at the time is that people kept jumping from, you know, one group to another, to another, to another, and then there's no end, as you said. So at that point, I realized that only if I committed to do a regular meditation practice, I perhaps could change something. And in fact, that's what happened. And now, you know, I'm just interested in meditation, and, you know, not because I've solved all my problems, but, you know, I can cope with normal things in life. But what my interest is really, you know, going beyond the mind, and you can do just that only through meditation. Also, I'd like to highlight that you work with people who are already therapists. So you work with doctors, you work with psychologists and various other professionals who deal with people's problems. So essentially, you kind of train the trainers. And by doing that, you make a huge impact on many people's life. So how is for you to be this sort of master trainer, if you like?
Well, it of course, I learned all my stuff from Osho, from being in the commune, and from sitting with him, really, all my, the present. And for me, it's always that, coming from a place of presence, that's the most important thing in therapy. If you're as a therapist, you're not present, you're not there, you're not going to help anybody, really. You know, no matter how good your techniques are, it's not going to work. Because what is essentially, the person is looking for some truthful contact. And that is something that being in presence and allowing presence to be there is what we learn by sitting with Osho. You know, how many times of sitting with him, and how can I be present to whatever is there? Maybe pain, maybe fear, maybe drama, maybe no drama, maybe loss, whatever it is. But how can I be present? And that is what we're trying to really teach to doctors, to therapists, to anybody, to nurses. And most people don't know what that is. You know, today, of course, people do yoga, and that's the latest fashion, and that's also great. People get a bit more body-oriented and meditation-oriented. But still, being present is a whole different, it's a different quality that many people have no idea what that really is. And I feel like that is one of the things that Osho has taught me again and again and again, how to be present, how to be here, how not to judge, how to be open, you know, to create a field that is completely unjudgmental. Yeah, and for many people, and if you're very based on the mind and on stories, you don't know what it is to be unjudgmental. You have to be based in presence and in the heart. Otherwise, you don't know what non-judgmentality is. Yeah, so that is something that we bring into our work. That's what really the basic of the work. You know, once you're present, then you. Once you're present from there, then you can look at the whatever we call issues, or you can look at whatever you have to deal with. But if there's no presence, there's no landing place, really. So, and I see that many, many people need that particular quality, and it's very, very difficult to get. You can't just play being present. You know, it has to be a state of being embodied in your body, in your heart, in your being. And that is what Osho has created for all of us, you know, by being there day after day after day, talking and being there and sharing. Well, most of the time, probably many of us were just snoring away, but he was just there. He's there and there and there, and he still is there, you know, just not embodied, but it's just that same thing.
Thank you for clearing that up. You are very active, and you've been, of course, creating so many different type of groups, as you mentioned before, including the Path of Love. And we didn't go into the details because, you know, the Path of Love perhaps deserves a whole different episode. It's a huge topic, and you co-created together with Rafia this one-week group, which helped thousands of people. You know, so many people I met that attended the group came up totally transformed. So I don't know what you do there, but something good for sure. So we can talk about that on a separate episode. But I'd love to hear, what are your current projects and what are you up to now?
Well, Rafi and I are still very, very involved in expanding Path of Love in a big way. It's happened all over the world, but we're still holding the field together and trying to make it an operation that is conscious and is really kind and compassionate. I mean, for the people who are leading it, you know. Then we're also doing what is called Working with People, where we do training for therapists, 5-6-part training that happens in Italy and soon will happen in Holland. And that's it's really the peak of both of our work, where we really teach all the stuff that we have learned from Osho and what we have learned also through essence work, you know, through the work with Faisal Mukaddam and Almas, who both are creators of what we call the essence work, where you work with essence and you look at the losses of essence and the issues that essence have. That's a big training. It's gone very, very well. And it's really, Rafia put in, we feel like we're at an age where we should pass on all the stuff that we have learned to the younger people. And it's a fantastic training. I love being there. It's very embodied. It's very, very, new. It, of course, incorporates trauma work and many of the different new tools that we have. So that is the main thing I'm doing right now.
So where people can find you if they want to know more about your activities and perhaps, you know, get in touch with you and attend one of your groups?
One is called, of course, pathretreats.com, and the other one is workingwithpeopletrainings.com. Those are the two sites. I don't have my personal website right now. I just let it go. I thought it's enough with the other two sites.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. And I'll link your websites in the show notes, so if anyone is interested, they can find you from there.
Yeah.
Or directly, of course.
It'll be great to talk about the Path of Love and give it more, because that's a fantastic process. It's really an amazing process of transformation. So, of course, not today, because we're already over time, but that would be great also.
Yeah, absolutely. We can have another podcast on that, perhaps together with Rafia. I repeat, I met so many people who have done the group, and they just come out different, and they even can't talk about it too much, because when you ask what happens there, they can't say it, but you can see in their face that they're totally blown away. So it's something wonderful that you do.
Yeah.
So yeah. Heading towards the end, then I've got three final questions.
Mm-hmm.
So the first one is, what's your morning routine? How does your morning look like in the first couple of hours of your day?
Well, after Osho told me right from the beginning, Vipassana is your way, even though I've been working with groups all the time, I actually sit. For me, sitting and just being with what is really one of my main practice. Not only, I get up very early in the morning, I love to do that. And that's really my main meditation practice. And then I also do on a regular basis, I love doing Kundalini. I love Kundalini. It's just one of the meditation that really works for me and gives a little bit of expression or lets me move the body a bit, and then usually afterwards I can sit better. So those are the two main things that I do, plus walking. I love walking also in the morning, but mostly sitting is what really gives me that that presence, that moment of being present to whatever is there, you know, and being interested enough to really look what it is and watch the breath and watch what happens inside, watch what happens outside, and just practicing being there, really. And I love doing that. So it's my it's really always the highlight of my day, always.
Beautiful. And I guess you already answered the second question, which is what's your favorite meditation?
That's my favorite. And also the other favorite meditation that I do is Latihan. I love Latihan because it's all about letting go. You stand and, we have music with it, and then you just learn to let go. And for me, meditation is so much about letting go. Letting go of the mind, letting go of identities, letting go of, you know, the importance of my feelings, letting go of the ideas that I have how life should be. And it just is a preparation for letting go. And Latihan really, really evokes that in me. You just stand and allow the body to move in whatever way it wants to move. Or she used to say, just say, thy will be done. So Latihan for me is like a prayer.
The last question is, you lead the Osho experiment. You were one of the pioneers in this movement of creating a new man, Zorba the Buddha. What does it mean to you personally to be with Osho today in 2019?
Well, that's a good question. I feel like so many things are. I feel like Osho's work is just starting to really manifest itself to each one of us. You know, that of course there were the loss, and then the commune, and then I left the commune, and so did many other people. And I feel like so many people, including myself, we're just starting to arrive. I arrive in myself to see what actually Osho talked about, the new man. What does that mean, really? You know, and realizing what I realized with myself and many of my sannyasin friends, we really have something. You know, there's just something different there. And I can't even put my finger and exactly say what it is. I can say the how it looks on the outside. You know, I have a certain flexibility and not so attached to where I live, you know, and there's a certain looseness in things there. You know, there's a sense of humor. We can laugh about things that most people don't laugh about, don't think it's so funny. There's a celebration towards everything, anything. So I think it will be seen within the next 50 to 100 years, actually, the real impact Osho had on humanity. And even all the yoga movement and what happens today, I think Osho started that. You know, Osho, I feel like Osho will be recognized, maybe really recognized in maybe 100 years or something. And he'll have the same impact that Jesus had, you know, 2,000 years ago.
That's interesting, because I just wrote a blog exactly on this yesterday.
And oh, yeah?
Yes, on the Osho global impact, that it's not really recognized yet. People don't talk about it, but, you know, Osho is behind everything that is happening now in the world of spirituality, directly or indirectly, mainly because people somehow, for different reasons, don't mention Osho's name. People don't realize that, but it's his work. But anyway, I really wanted to highlight the fact that the people who have lived with Osho are a different level. You mentioned there is something that is difficult to put the fingers on, and I totally agree, and that's why I'm doing this podcast together with Chetna, and all our best friends are really sannyasins of your generation for some reason, even though there is an age gap, but we feel so connected to you guys, and we think that you are the most extraordinary human beings that we've ever come across, and we love you so much. much, and you are definitely one of those rarest jewels who blossom under Osho's tree.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much to be so enthusiastic and also be part of Osho's creation. You know, and I feel like you're as much part of it as we are. And it's wonderful to feel your presence and your interest and your love for Osho. I really feel that. And that is what brings us together, you know, even from Byron to, you know, Singapore. It's amazing. It's just something is a light there. And I can feel it in you. I can feel it in myself. And I feel it in so many other sannyasins. So in gratitude to you guys, and in gratitude, of course, to Osho who created all this. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been a wonderful experience connecting with you, and I really feel love, Osho presence, and send you, you know, big hug. Thank you for...
Yeah, me too. Big hug to both of you. And thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Love Osho podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, you can show your appreciation by leaving a review on iTunes. Visit loveoshow.com for new episodes, blogs,
and much more.